Hey there, welcome to Lie Number 63. My name is Jessica Hoddle and I'm your host. Today's lie that we are tackling is dieting will lead you to joy, and we have a special guest, Alexandra. You are listening to the What's the Truth podcast with me, Jessica Hoddle. I'm a wife, author, speaker, and coach. I refuse to let you keep believing the lies that are coming at you from every direction. Each week, I'll speak truth, bring encouragement, and inspire you as I uncover the lies you may believe to be true about your life. Each episode is meant to challenge the way you think, to change the way you live. I have spent so much time and energy trying to overcome these food rules and restrictions that I have set for myself. What I realized in my healing journey is that when it comes to restriction, it's often the things that we want the most, which then can easily lead us to binge. Or like me, my husband told me, Jess, you have cut so much food out of your diet already. What are you going to have to eat left? Because I was afraid to eat fruit because it had sugar. I was, you know, afraid to have gluten and dairy because of what it could happen to me. And there's a lot of narratives around food and dieting. That's why I brought on the special guest, Alexandra, because she's a functional medicine doctor, she's a food scientist, and she's an intuitive eater. She loves to really combine her healthcare knowledge and her personal experience so that she can help women have a holistic perspective on their health. And that's why I love this conversation so much, because it's not about a particular way of eating or a diet. We really address food rules, restrictions, body checking, what is intuitive eating, how to do that. So this episode is for you if you really struggle with the narratives of the dieting world, or you just felt overwhelmed with the way to eat, what not to eat, and last but not least, do you wrestle with the way that your body looks? This episode's for you. Okay, let's go ahead and get to the interview. Alexandra, I'm really excited about sharing this message with my listeners today. And I know that they have probably been on the journey that I've been on with the dieting world, all the things that come with the dieting world. And today's lie is dieting will lead you to joy. And we are really going to talk about how dieting typically does not lead us to joy. Maybe momentarily we'll get those short-term results, but we know that long-term emotionally, it tends to wreck us, right? So how about we just kind of go into this idea of you breaking down what is a diet versus dieting?
Yeah, definitely. So typically, you know, in terms of the definition of the word, everybody has a diet. They have a way that they eat the foods that they eat. You know, a dog's diet is different than a human diet for good reason. but when we talk about the word diet or dieting, it's more often referring to specific and intentional manipulation of what a person is eating. So it's based on external factors rather than internal factors. And those external factors could be something like looking at types of foods and being strict about that, looking at macronutrients or even micronutrients, or looking at calories, any way that we can measure, control, time our food, you know, eating in a certain time frame of the day is dieting in a certain way, because it's not based off of what our bodies are telling us. It's based off of these rules that we make. And oftentimes with dieting, there is a goal or purpose behind it. So there's a reason that we're making these changes and manipulating the way that we eat. And usually the purpose of that, whether it's admitted or not, is weight loss.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right there that any type of eating, we typically have a goal to be healthier. But what you're really saying, though, is the goal that we typically have is, will this make my body look X, Y, Z? And can I lose weight in X amount of days, you know, of this kind of almost the extreme? Because we all want to be healthy, right? We all want to have energy and those things. But it's really going beyond that mental kind of block with the restrictions. Mm-hmm. Now, I think helping women move from not the dieting world into more intuitive eating is very scary for a lot of women.
Yeah.
Can you just touch on those fear points and maybe address some truths to them? Because I know one is gaining weight, you know, eating a Snickers bar. Oh my gosh, I haven't had that in years. How am I going to be able to move past that? Can you just kind of speak into that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. So what I've come to understand is that many of those food-related fears ultimately are fears because we are afraid of what that food will do to our body, most specifically to the appearance of our body. And I think where that comes from is the fact that we put our identity in our body. So we view who we are as what we look like. And it's very scary to have your core identity threatened like that. Yeah. When you think food can change who I am in the sense of how I feel about myself or how I perceive others to feel about me or maybe how they actually feel about me. It affects our confidence and how we interact with other people based on how we identify with our bodies. And that's not to say that we're separate from our bodies. I think our bodies are important and they do have an important role in how we live life and inform that, but they aren't our identity in the sense of they don't define our worth. They don't define our value. They don't define our relationships, or they shouldn't with other people or with God.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. I was just thinking too, it's that those narratives that we believe about what will happen, because we've heard so bad that sugar is bad. You know, we've heard so many times, don't eat this, don't eat bananas, don't eat fruit, don't. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon people start to think, well, what can I eat? How can we begin to move away from those narratives and begin to look at them objectively? Because like I said, we've heard for so long, it's carbs are bad, sugars are bad. And I think that's why so many women get overwhelmed and they try a diet because of all the narratives surrounding that diet.
One of the things that I find to be helpful is to remember that there's a diet that demonizes literally every food. And if they were all right, then there would be nothing left to eat except for air and water. And so that's obviously not how we survive and thrive in this life. And so if you find yourself, my encouragement to somebody who maybe would find themselves preoccupied with fear about, let's say, carbs, you know, it could be anything though, like fill in the blank, try to zoom out and think about a time in your life when you were eating that and everything was fine. Because we tend to kind of have this all or nothing view, like everything is going to fall apart if I give up this rule that I have come to. But we come into these food rules at a point in our life. We weren't born with them. You know, babies are born with consuming all macronutrients for like essential to growth and development. The same is true of humans. Like we've been eating food for millions of years or for as long as humans have been walking this earth, and food was never as complicated as it was when we started to put this emphasis on the relationship between food and appearance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You do a beautiful job of really breaking down these narratives on your Instagram, and I love it. And one was you talked about you are what you eat. And I realized a lot of the narratives in the fitness and dieting world often lead to negativity, right? It's never typically positive. It's you're doing all these things wrong. You need to do these things right. And a narrative is you are what you eat. And, you know, you had this graphic and it's, I'm just going to paraphrase a couple of things, but you know, if you eat a Snickers, you're not a Snickers, right? You know? And so can you talk a little bit about that, of this whole idea that you are what you eat?
Yeah, I think it came from more so a health related topic. You know, if you eat food that gives you strength and vitality, then you will have strength and vitality, you know, but I think that's even limited. I mean, there's some validity to it. You need to have balance and adequacy and feed yourself well in order to have the energy and the strength to do the things that you want to do in life. But it kind of gets sucked into this bigger picture of, you know, if you want to be XYZ Finspo model and look like her, then you have to eat like her. So that's, you are what you eat. If you eat like her, you'll look like her. If you want to lose weight, you have to follow this weight loss diet. You are what you eat if you follow it correctly. And, you know, it's an unrealistic standard because we're never going to succeed in being something that we can't actually be. Like, you can't be the girl down the street. You actually can't be like your eighth grade self if she was like 20 pounds lighter. You're just today. That's what your body is. And it's not ever going to look perfect if your standard isn't already what you are, because we're all diverse and that's a good thing. And so I think paying attention to that message and how it's focused on something that is unattainable, it sets you up for failure and shame. And so I actually hate that phrase, because it's like, no, I'm not what I eat, first of all, because like the things that I eat don't necessarily directly translate into the size and shape of my body. Like, that's genetics. Thank you. And secondly, my worth and my identity are not in what I eat. Even in some of the diet culture that we have, there's almost like this cult-like following for certain diet groups. Like, I'm not trying to point fingers at anything, but even like veganism has this really strong, like, impassioned following, or like paleo, or like, and a lot of times there's community around it. Like, paleo tends to go hand in hand with CrossFit, which has a lot of community involved in that, the kind of workout schedule, which that's good. You should have community, but then it brings in food and you start to associate, like, if I don't eat this way, I'm going to be rejected from my community too. Yeah. And it's just so complex and nuanced, the ways that food has come to define us. And we believe that.
No, I agree with that. In relating, I think you made a great point of relating relationship with community. And what happens if you stop eating that way? Or what happens if you just don't even feel good eating that way? You know, and I think that's just the problem, is paleo for a short time or a long time or whatever. For me, it's, why do we have to give the way we eat a specific name? You know, What if you wanted to just eat low carb or no grains? Like, what is that? You know, like, what if you would do dairy-free, gluten-free, low carb, you know, no, like, it all mixes together. And I think that that is where, if we could try to maybe move out of the labeling, which I know you're huge on as well, I think we can move more into freedom, which I think leads me to my next question of, why do you think diets bring condemnation? But we know that God's love obviously brings freedom.
Mm-hmm. I think that kind of goes back to what we were talking about, setting us up for failure. It's really challenging to follow a strict set of rules with regards to the way we eat, or with anything. Like, our lives are so much more fluid and variable than that. And so having this strict standard of eat this, not that, or don't eat this, you know, do not taste, do not touch, it's setting us up to break those rules. And the more we cling to them, the more it hurts when we fail to meet those standards that we've set for ourselves. And, you know, it also ties into the fact that we tend to, like, have these body image struggles that go along with our food struggles. And so, you know, we fail at food, and instead of seeing it as, you know, oh, I ate like an extra whatever that I didn't mean to eat, now it's all of a sudden, this is the reason that my body shape and size doesn't measure up to what I want it to be. And I am a failure. I am incapable of doing the good things in life that I want to. And once again, that comes back to our identity. And when we shift to what a life of freedom actually looks like, it can never be based on external factors that we can't control. Like, we really, at the end of the day, can't control the size and shape of our body. We can't control what our body needs, like those signals that it's giving us. We can't suppress them. But if we base our identity on who God says we are, something that we can't change, that isn't within our control, a beloved daughter of the King who created us, that changes everything. Because instead of trying to live up to a standard, the standard's been set, and that sets you free from trying to earn approval.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking of the book. There's a lot of books called Eat This, Not That. And so when you said that, I started thinking, and I think it's great to have ideas for healthier alternatives. And I think most importantly, I hope the listeners really understand that we're not saying that you can't choose healthier options or just eat all the Snickers or anything like that. We're really addressing the narratives behind dieting and the culture that we kind of fall into of that. And it really leads us down this rabbit hole of, we attach who we are to what we weigh, to what we eat. And then if we don't do it perfect, we feel like we're failing constantly, right? It's, I had a great breakfast and a great lunch, but I messed up at dinner. I'm sure you've heard that so many times, right? And I think many women probably want to know, how do I start with intuitive eating?
Yeah. I think the single most important step in doing that is making the decision for yourself that it's going to be worth it to you, and taking into account, I need to sacrifice this stronghold that my body shape and size has over my life, because if I stop dieting, my body shape and size might change. Now, many people end up, like, their body changes in a positive way, and they're surprised by that, because dieting doesn't actually work in terms of helping us control ourselves. But making that decision that it's going to be worth it to you and finding your own personal reasons, because it's not easy. Like you said, there's a lot of fear involved. And then going beyond that, you know, it's starting to look at, okay, what is the condition of my current situation? You know, where are the places that my diet obsession is negatively affecting my life? You know, what are the food rules that I have specifically, and trying to survey like where you're at. And that can be challenging to do, you know, depending on how long it's been a problem for you. Like I often think it's helpful to work with somebody who's trained in diet recovery and or eating disorder recovery, kind of whatever words you kind of want to use. And just kind of being honest with yourself about this is where I'm at, and then making a plan to systematically oppose all of those things. So like if you do not let yourself eat a certain food, like start eating it at every meal until it feels normal. And you understand that you can just eat it whenever you want to as part of a meal within a healthy eating schedule. And what I mean by that is like, obviously you don't want to be eating all day. That's not what anybody's body would tell them to do if you're in tune with it. But like, if you like donuts, like have a donut with part of your breakfast and learn that it's okay because a donut is a carb. And like, if you fear donuts and that's why you end up eating six of them every time you reach for one, it's the fear, not the donut, that's the problem.
I think that leads right into, can you talk about the cycle then of what really happens when we restrict, you know, and go on these diets for X amount of weeks, or I'm going to eat this way for the rest of my life, which I think is just so unrealistic because we change, our bodies change, and it needs different things. Mm-hmm. But I don't think people even realize consciously that when we restrict, it makes us want it more. And then we are like, why did I just eat a whole bowl or a whole box of cereal? Can mm-hmm. you talk about that kind of restriction binge cycle?
Yeah. So it shows up in two ways. One would be if you're actually physically restricting either energy or a macronutrient. So like, let's say you're restricting fat. Okay. So you're not getting enough fat then, or you're restricting fat. And as a consequence of that, it's causing you to have an energy deficit. Like your body doesn't want to be in that state. It wants to get what it needs. And so it's going to create this biological drive to eat foods that will provide you with what you need. So whether that's energy like calories, or it's a, like fat that you need, or carbs, whatever, you're going to have these really intense cravings for those foods or foods that will provide those things to you because you need them. And that's a good thing. Like our bodies are wired for survival, and that's, we should all be grateful for that. It feels like sometimes a curse if you're trying to oppose it. But you know, if you didn't live in the society that you currently live in, I think people would appreciate it a lot more, what our bodies can do and what they're capable of. The second part of that is the mind game, right? So even if someone is eating a calorically balanced or macronutrient balanced diet, but they're, let's say, like trying to eat clean, whatever that even means. So let's say it's like avoiding sugary foods. Okay. So sure, maybe you are getting enough carbohydrates anyway, or enough calories anyway, but you create this obsession in your mind, like telling yourself you can't have something makes you want it. It's just how psychology works. Like if we always go back to that example of don't think about a pink elephant, and then all of a sudden you're thinking about a pink elephant. And if you've ever tried to resist something that, I mean, realistically doesn't need to be resisted, it kind of incentivizes that thing. And so then when you finally break free from that, like resisting, and you start eating it, it's like this whole cascade happens in your mind. Like, oh, well, I blew it. I might as well eat it. Oh, well, I'm finally eating it. It tastes so good. And I can't stop now because it tastes so good. And what people realize when they transition away from that is just how true it is that it's psychological, our obsession with a certain food item, like cravings. If they aren't physiologically based, they come from restriction. Like when I gave myself permission to eat everything that I wanted to eat, I was surprised by how many foods that I previously would binge on, I just didn't even like and had no desire to eat because I didn't need them anymore. Like I didn't need them as that thing to cling to for directing my attention to avoiding, because I was living for bigger things than that.
I think when it comes to dieting too, we do this thing before we diet where I'm going to eat all the foods. I'm going to eat everything that I need to restrict myself from. And then we diet and then we go, okay, I cannot wait until I can eat those foods again. Mm-hmm. And I think even just evaluating that, like you said, of why am I doing this? You know, and then thinking about the food, what it means to me. Now we talked about intuitive eating. Let's talk about then breaking food rules. How do we do that?
Mm-hmm. So I kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier, but like whatever you have a food rule about, like if it's a broad category that can be a little bit complicated, like fat or carbs or whatever, or sugar, right? Because that's in a lot of different things. But pick one or two foods, if it's not already a specific food, and make a plan to eat that regularly throughout the day for as many days as it takes for you to genuinely not want it anymore. So one of the things that I did this with was ice cream in my own kind of recovery process. And I had ice cream like at breakfast, lunch, dinner, in the afternoon, every time I wanted it, until like a week later, I was so over ice cream that I just didn't want it anymore. Like, and it slowly tapered off, you know. For a while it was really awesome to eat it for every meal. And then by the next day, it was kind of like, I only really wanted it once or twice. And then by the end of the week, it was like, I don't really think I even want this at all anymore. Yeah. And it was so eye-opening to me, because that is so not how I had been programmed to believe my body would relate to ice cream. Like, I thought that sugar addiction was a thing. Update, it's not. I thought that I was, you know, just powerless over these foods that I enjoyed. I thought my cravings were uncontrollable. And really, it was just my mind telling me that I couldn't have them. And ever since then, ice cream's just been something I eat when I feel like it. And then I move on with my life. Like, it's never come back with a vengeance. Like, all of a sudden, ice cream is powerful and I was fooling myself. Like, no, I really just, same, like, ice cream is whatever, and every food is whatever, and it is what it is. And that's a really freeing way to live. You know, sometimes it's like, oh, well, I like how I feel when I love to eat food. And you can still like to eat food, but it doesn't have to be having that power over you.
Yeah. Well, you said a very powerful phrase in there, and I think we need to go back to it, about sugar addiction not being a thing. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. You're right. That's a quite a loaded.
You just kind of like, oh, I'm just going to breeze by this.
This is a conversation I have all the time. You know, people feel very strongly that it's a thing because they feel like they're addicted to sugar, for one, or there are these studies that were showing that rats' brains light up when they eat sugar in the same way that like an addictive person's brain would light up. And really, this science is bad science. So what they did with some of these studies is they took a group of rats and they starved them, and then they gave them either regular food or sugar. And so then they like overate and engorged themselves on the sugar because it was a faster form of energy, which biologically speaking makes sense. But when they repeated the experiment with rats who had not been starved, they did not show that behavior. So there's, you know, one key area that people have a misguided understanding of, like, this research that gets cited in like journals and then in the media, and then people write about it on their blog, and it just kind of like misses exactly what was going on. And there was another study that shows that sugar lights up these, you know, lights up on imaging studies, right? So they can see that it's activating parts of the brain that get activated when people use addictive drugs like cocaine. But what the media did not also share about that study is that other things also light up that same area, like anything that's pleasurable. So sex, or drinking tea, or listening to music, like things that are really common everyday parts of life that nobody's demonizing the way that we demonize sugar. And, you know, there is something to be said for, like, if you have a metabolic disorder, then your relationship to sugar from a biological perspective is going to look different. Sure, that's not false. But for the average healthy person who doesn't have a metabolic disorder, if you let yourself eat sugar when you're craving sugar, then you don't want it anymore. And that's the opposite of how addiction works.
Mm, yeah. I that's why I said it's a big statement, and I'm sure people will probably maybe go to you. So yeah, make sure you guys follow her. I'll have the links in the show notes below. But I kind of wanted to ask, well, two more questions, but one, you, in your book, Fulfilled, which is your new book, which is exciting, you talk about body checking. Let's talk about that. What is it? What do you mean by that? And how can we apply that?
Yeah. Body checking is a group of behaviors that we tend to engage in whenever we're feeling insecure, right, about the size and shape of our bodies. And so what that might look like is looking at yourself in the mirror, kind of poking or prodding at different parts of your body, putting on certain clothes to make sure they still fit. A lot of it's rooted in this fear that our body has changed suddenly, right? So usually it's, people will kind of do this compulsively, like throughout the day, they'll look at reflective surfaces or find the mirror and check to make sure that they look how they did at 8 o'clock this morning or 2 weeks ago, or in comparison to other people, or in comparison to what they looked like in a photo that they saw, like, oh my gosh, do I really look like that? Now I need to go check myself in the mirror. All these sorts of things that really are coming from a place of fear and shame. And it's very unhelpful because it's every time we do that, it's reinforcing in our brain that the little minutiae of how we look are supremely important when really they're not. If we don't let them, they don't influence our day at all. And everybody's body changes throughout the day. We retain water, we lose water, we have food in our stomach, which like that takes up space. So then your stomach is going to look different by the end of the day. And that's a good thing. Like these fluctuations of our body are good because our bodies are dynamic. We're alive. Like everything that moves is alive. And if it doesn't, then you're dead. Like no movement, no change, no growth is a sign of death, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you find yourself agonizing over these little perceived changes or real changes in your body over time or throughout a day, just notice that it's not helping you to continue to engage in that behavior and try to make a plan for yourself to limit that. And what I find to be true for in terms of what I experienced as well as when I'm working on this with patients of mine is the less you do it, the less you want to do it. It's kind of like a self-sustaining type of behavior. And so if you can create some of that space, once you get there, it's easier and easier to create more space and to resist it more. And, you know, if you find yourself tempted to do that, you know, have a plan for what you're going to do instead, if that's like, even just like walk out of the room that has the mirror or turn away from that direction or, you know, go for a walk, call a friend, like anything that will help create some space between you and that behavior.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because in my recovery process with body image and things, body checking, I didn't even realize it was a thing, but then I read it in your book and I was like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. I had to recover from that, you know, of just that I'm going to lift up my shirt and look at my stomach.
Yeah.
You know, what does it look like? So I love that you address that in your book. Now, with everything that we talked about today, Alexandra, what do you want to leave the listeners with? Maybe a call to action or encouragement when it comes to their body or food?
Yeah, I would just leave people with this reminder that your body is good. It's not your enemy. It's not trying to work against you. It's a gift. And I don't want you to look back at your life when you're 80 years old and think about how much time you spent at war with yourself. And I think that would just lead to a lot of regret for all of us. So how can you live today so that by the end of your life, you can look back and say, okay, that was a fulfilling life?
Yeah, that's a good word. Now, one question I always like to ask all the guests is what lie often comes for you that you have to speak truth to? Now, the lie doesn't have to be anything about food or body image, just a lie in general that comes for you that you have to speak truth to.
Wow, that is a big question. I would probably say it comes to just once again, my identity and thinking about like, if I'm achieving enough to feel worthy or, you know, making sure I don't offend somebody with what I do or say. And, I'm continually in the process of trying to show myself grace in those areas and remind that who I am is independent on what I do and just trying to live out that freedom of Christ, and his love in my life. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we all can relate to that of the striving part of us that wants to put our actions and to do something to kind of get this outcome. And it's just beautiful, this becoming process, which is why I love to ask the guests that question. It just helps me and the listeners just relate to you on a different level of, hey, she struggles too. She's an expert in this area, but the Lord is working at her on this area. So thank you so much for sharing. And where do you want people to hang out with you, Alexandra?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram. My handle is Alexandra C. McKillop, or on my blog is alexandramckillop.com. And then, of course, if you wanted to learn more about what we were talking about today, I'd encourage you to check out my new book, which is Fulfilled, Let Go of Shame, Embrace Your Body, and Eat the Food You Love. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, or my publisher's website, which is Broadleaf Books.
Awesome. Well, I'll make sure I have all the links in the show notes below so that people can find you and go learn more about you. So thanks again for all the wisdom that you shared with us today, Alexandra.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It was an honor.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode. I pray that it encouraged you in your journey, but also I pray that it encouraged you to try what Alexandra said, that food that you've been restricting, Maybe you start to eat it slowly at every meal until you realize that it really doesn't have control over you. Or like Alexandra shared, that ice cream was not even something that she really wanted or craved. What can you do today that maybe you've been, like I said, restricting or afraid to do? What narrative can you challenge today and bring truth to regarding your body or the foods that you eat or how you look at dieting altogether? I'd love for you to come join me on my Instagram at Living Free, Living Healthy. Follow Alexandra as well. Go check her out. But most importantly, just thank you for being here. Thank you for sticking it out until the end and listening to these episodes. It really means so much to me. And I love hearing from the listeners. And when you guys DM me and share what episode spoke to you the most or what resonated, it truly blesses me and lets me know that there is somebody on the other side listening to whatever it is that we have to share for that day. So thank you. Thank you for taking the time to leave a rating and review if this podcast has in any way encouraged your heart. And remember, challenge the way you think so that you can change the way you live.